President. Mr. President, I speak today of my strong concern over what I believe are troubling movements in the Western Hemisphere in relation to the U.S. energy independence, energy security, and competitiveness of the U.S. oil and gas industry in the region, and this country's political and economic influence in our own backyard. For all the right reasons, in the past few years, we've been appropriately focused on the development of the greater Middle East as we have engaged in a global war on terror and fought in Afghanistan and Iraq. Again, we are absolutely right to be engaged in conflicts in that region. But it is dangerous for any region to have a monopoly on its own country's attention. At home, in this United States Senate, we've engaged in many debates regarding U.S. energy independence. This issue was first recognized in World War I when Winston Churchill stated that the answer to energy security lie in variety and variety alone. Energy security is becoming a hot topic, and many senators, Democrats and Republicans, have been on the floor the last few days talking about tight oil markets and high oil prices and threats of terrorism and instability in some of the exporting nations and nationalistic backlashes in other fiercely competitive areas and supplies and geopolitical rivalry and all the country's absolute needs for energy power to grow their economies. We have no time to waste to move forward on a sound national energy policy. Many of us in this body have taken the first step. We passed last August a national energy policy, and by its action, we agreed to drastically decrease our energy dependence on the Middle East. And now our economy and energy is working in that direction, slowly, because of the phenomenal investment and time it takes to turn something as big as our energy industries of all kinds. In 2005, the U.S. obtained 41% of its total petroleum imports from OPEC countries, which equals 27% of total U.S. consumption. In order to reduce our reliance on Middle East energy sources and strengthen our nation's energy security, it goes without saying that our energy sector must be doing business elsewhere. No doubt, the closest and therefore the most economically viable option should be to turn to our own backyard, or should I say yards. Unfortunately, that's hard to do when we too frequently send our oil and gas companies into international competition, hobbled by self-defeating laws and regulations that allow our economic adversaries and our competitors to beat us to the punch right out at our doorstep. I must point out that it is certainly ironic that the same people blocking the American public from obtaining resources in our own country and in the region are the same people not offering solutions to the new and very rapidly growing demand across the world. Frankly, the United States has taken our neighbors in the Western Hemisphere for granted. We have hamstrung the U.S. energy sector by seeking additional resources in the region while at the same time allowing the likes of China and Canada and Brazil and France and others to freely seek energy opportunities 50 miles off our coast without competition from states in the art of and the use of our technology and our expertise of our own U.S. gas and oil industry. I have here a chart that is phenomenally self-explaining. Here is the coast of Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. Of course, here's the Great Peninsula, or the panhandle of Florida, down to the Keys. Here's Cuba. And literally, within the last 2 years, Cuba, within their water, 50 miles off the furthest of the keys of Florida, has allowed the nations of China and Canada and Spain to start drilling. It will be possible, or should I say it may be possible, to stand on the furthest Florida key in the near future and see an oil rig drilling in Cuban water. Did that happen accidentally? No. Why isn't it an American company with the best technology that could do it the cleanest there? Because we've simply not allowed that to be. For example, a February 2005 U.S. Geological Survey reported on a possible deposit in the northern Cuban basin, this area that's all charted off, in an estimate of between 4.6 billion barrels of oil and possibly as much as 9.3 billion. I would remind my colleagues, these estimates are almost the same as the kind we're talking about on the coastal plain of Alaska, known as Anwar. And it is simply 50 to 60 miles off our coast. So the question must be asked, what is the U.S. doing while foreign countries and companies are exploring right off the coast in the northern Cuban basin, which is adjacent to the U.S. outer continental shelf and contiguous to this country's exclusive economic zone? Well, I can firmly tell my colleagues that we are doing absolutely nothing about it. Not one single U.S. company is exploring in these potentially beneficial waters that extend to within 50 miles of the Florida coast. Oh, we're all angst about gas sale, lease sale 181, and it is at least 120 miles off of any coast. But right next door, stand on a high place in the lower Florida Keys, and someday you may see an oil rig, and it won't be ours. It could be Red China's, or certainly mainland China's. I guess that's the politically correct thing to say about them now. And frankly, ladies and gentlemen, it is China, and they are drilling in our backyard. I'm certain the American public would be shocked, as this country is trying to reduce its dependency on Middle East oil, that countries like China are realizing this energy resource. In my opinion, China is using the area off our coast and in the Cuban national waters as a strategic commodity reserve. It is doing this by acquiring exclusive rights in the emerging Cuban offshore oil sector, thereby forever closing the door to those resources to the United States itself and dramatically impacting our foreign policy in the region. As the administration recently pointed out, in its national security strategy, China has quickly become the world's second largest user of petroleum products. Additionally, the administration's most recent national security strategy appropriately points out that China is expanding trade, but acting as if they can somehow lock up energy supplies around the world or seek to direct markets rather than opening them up. We will miss the boat because, folks, this boat will sail only but once. If we continue to deny ourselves the right to allow our companies to engage where they ought to be engaging, where they have the talent, the resource, and the expertise to engage. But instead, we are, by our action, forcing potentially substandard companies who don't have the talent, the expertise, the environmental know-how, to drill in an area that could be phenomenally damaging to the coast of Florida. That's the reality of today's policy in this country. Higher oil prices will spur others to turn to marginal opportunities in commercial prospects with or without the United States. As we saw last week, since demand for oil is so high, any disruption in small production, whether it be in Ecuador or Argentina or the Congo or Egypt or Azerbaijan or Bahrain or Sudan or Yemen or Chad, can have a profound impact on price at the pump anywhere in this country. It is for this reason that we must and should act aggressively to diversify our imports and production and compete with other nations around the world. On top of the economic competitiveness we are missing out on, we are also allowing the energy security of this country to slip away right in our backyard. Simply put, too many unknowns lie in the hands of terrorists and the instability, the chaos of the Middle East. Therefore, let us think about and rid ourselves of the vulnerability that we forced ourselves into by the responsible and environmentally sound development of our own resources or resources that are just across the fence in our neighbor's backyard. This is the opportunity we now deny ourselves. I intend to look at these opportunities to bring about potential legislation that will cause this Senate to look and to act responsibly, as it would allow us to deal with these kinds of opportunities instead of simply deny them. We think we can build a buffer around us to secure ourselves environmentally, and yet we've denied our back door. Our back door is open. The southern Florida coast are potentially vulnerable to second-rate drilling capabilities from foreign countries who don't have the kind of deep water expertise and the talent that has resulted in no spills by U.S. companies now for well over a decade. Therein lies the opportunity. And yet we have some that would say, oh my, 50 miles we'll turn our back on. But 100 miles out, ooh, we got a problem there. No, folks, we got a problem here, and we got a problem in Cuba. And we ought to be recognizing it instead of denying it. Here's the reality. Here's the sale area, the opportunity that Cuba is now exploiting by allowing foreign countries to come in our backyard, or can I say, just across the fence, in our neighbor's backyard. Is it 50 miles off the coast of Key West? Is it 70? Is it 90? It's all of those. And it is potentially an opportunity for us to work with another government in effectively, responsibly, and environmentally exploiting a very valuable resource. We've denied it, and shame on us. I yield the floor. I'd be happy to.
Senator from Florida.
The senator's point that he makes very well is that foreign governments such as the Republic of China drilling off the north coast of Cuba, because of the currents that the currents come up there in the Gulf of Mexico down around the Florida Keys, what's known as the Straits of Florida, and then northward as it turns into the Gulf Stream. The senator is making the point that illegitimate or unrestrained second-rate drilling that would occur off the North Cuba coast could threaten the delicate environment and ecology of the coral reefs and the Florida coast. Is that one of the points that the senator would make?
Well, the point I'm making is that we have had the expertise in the Gulf to do it and do it right without any environmental damage. But we have denied exploration within a certain margin or buffer zone of the coast. And in this case, so here's lease sale 181 that's being talked about today. On the average, well, from Pensacola, it's 100 miles out or somewhere approximate. Here we have, and this is gas. This is oil and gas. And at the closest point, we believe, at least to the line here of the EEZ, it is 50 miles. I just simply offer this as an opportunity for the American people to become aware that in their backyard something is going on that we're ignoring at this moment and that we shouldn't be.
If the senator would further yield, I would just point out very respectfully to the senator that the chart that he shows with the oblong green block there, that is the existing lease of lease sale 181. And what is proposed is an additional 4 million acres to the east in an area, if, yes, sir, in there, as the senator points, and that that is the area that is restricted because it is the largest training and testing area for the United States military in the world. It is, as declared by the Pentagon, incompatible to have rigs where we are doing the testing and training of our United States military. And I would simply remind the senator, who is a great supporter of the United States military, why did all pilot training for the FA-22 come to Tyndall Air Force Base in Panama City? And why did, in the realignment, all pilot training for the new FA-35, for the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, come to Eglin Air Force Base? And why did all of the U.S. Navy Atlantic Fleet training come to Northwest Florida after it was shut down?
Answer the question, because you've answered it for yourself. It's obvious why. Training capability. We also know this, and the military will agree to this. Once a well is drilled, the rig goes away, and there is no surface obstruction. And we're talking about 3 trillion cubic feet of gas, potentially. We may be talking about a whole region that has 6 or 7 billion barrels of oil in it, let alone trillions of cubic feet of gas. We ought to be concerned environmentally, but my guess is we can fly around them a little bit while it's going on, and then the rigs go away, but the oil and the gas keep flowing for the sake and the security of the economy of this country. I don't think our citizens at the pumps right now are worried too much about flight patterns, but they're worried awful lot about a flat pocketbook, because we have not offered ourselves the foresightedness that I'm trying to suggest our foreign policy in these instances denied. You and I will debate 181 and beyond, but in our back door, and a heck of a lot closer to your coastline for your state than any sail proposed today out of 181 toward the east is 50 miles off, where the Chinese at this moment are test drilling to determine whether, in fact, there is a supply of oil. Then the rigs go in place, and then the environmental issues that you and I are concerned about may well come to being. I hope I'm wrong, but I know I'm right about this. These sales and test drillings are currently going on, and I yield the floor.
Well, this senator, if I might just conclude and compliment the gentleman the senator from Idaho, this senator certainly has a commonality of interest with the senator with regard to people like China drilling off the north coast of Cuba and all the threat not only to the United States interest that that portends, but also to the interests of Florida. We will debate the question of oil drilling out there in the military area of the eastern Gulf of Mexico, particularly at a time that the people are recognizing that we ought to be independent of oil, not continuing the dependence that we have on oil.
Well, I thank the senator for his comments. Before I yield the floor, let me suggest that whether it's the senator from Florida or the senator from Idaho, I think the American people are saying to us, a foreign policy that allows China to drill in our backyard, not a very good policy. I yield the floor.